is the information age anxiety. I'm not getting the information I need. I'm getting too much information. I don't know how to use the information I've got. Just maybe help is on the way. I'm Jude Tillman, and this is the Communications Revolution. You think if you heard that killer applications are coming into your home through your TV set? Well, before you get nervous about hitmen in your living room, we're talking about the new media and ways you can interact with your television. So what are the killer applications? One top media executive offered his list, and guess what they are? Taking college classes at home after work? Wrong. Video games, pay-per-view, home shopping, gambling, and advertising. These are seen as the backbone of future media. Who's creating this stuff, and is it what we really want? We will discuss the promise and potential of the new media with three panelists. Here in the Berkeley studios of KPFA, we have Janice Maloney, editor of Digital Media, a monthly newsletter about telecommunications in print, entertainment, and broadcast. Louis Rossetto, co-founder and publisher of Wired magazine, which has been called the Rolling Stone of the digital age. And from the Boston studios of Monitor Radio, John Orwant, who oversees research for a new personalized electronic newspaper service developed by MIT Media Lab. Our discussion of future media will begin after this report from producer Dee Roberts.
Infotainment, infomercials, interactivity. Interaction used to mean people getting together to talk to each other in a social setting. Now it means having greater choice and therefore perhaps more control over what we read, see, and hear, including how we get the news.
Not attacking you. Don't think I'm attacking you. Can't you make a decision 13 years ago based upon whatever your situation was? Don't we always, as human beings, have the right to change our minds? Do we not?
The question is, we've been talking to sisters who are really feuding. Can they ever be friends? And to help us understand, we've enlisted the...
The views expressed by the host on this show have swept a nation. A nation listens in dazzled, stunned awe.
Talk shows may not be the highest form of journalism, but they are popular. And phone-in shows are where a lot of folks are getting ideas and information these days. With a punch of the speed dial on phones, car phones, and faxes, anyone, anytime, anywhere can try to get through for a chance to talk back.
This is a special edition of the Rush Limbaugh program, America Held Hostage.
At the Shiloh Inn Sports Bar in Portland, Oregon, people gather to watch people talking back to Rush Limbaugh. No other host has a radio and TV show, books on the bestseller list, his own newsletter, and electronic bulletin board. Rush is big, while his views are narrow. And people do gather to hear his talk.
Hey, 378 for the rich and the dead since the...
What do you think about the people who called
in? I think they are not only expressive like he is, but they endorse what he says.
And now, Bill Gallagher on KXL, News Radio 750.
19 minutes till 2 o'clock. Let's go to Brad.
Bill Gallagher's talk show follows Rush in Portland, but Gallagher is liberal, and he says most people call his show to disagree with him.
And you laughed him almost off the air. Don't take this as a personal...
No. More and more, the typical talk show host is white, male, and conservative, even if he doesn't want to be.
The name of the game in radio is to keep your job. And there might be talk show hosts, and I can't say exactly who they are, but I suspect that some will customize their opinions and customize their philosophy to what the market wants. And if the station that's doing the hiring wants a conservative talk show host, voila, they'll be conservative.
Gallagher says this format fills a social need.
It's the back fence of today. People don't talk to their neighbors. one of the things in society today is that a lot of people don't feel they get enough respect. And they may not get a lot of respect when they call a talk radio station, but for a little while there, they're the ones that other people are listening to.
But what happens when people aren't satisfied just to talk to a host on a show? What if they want more control of what they get from the media?
And if you dial quick, we'll give you news bits. 500 channels, no problem.
Welcome to Newsweek Interactive.
The makers of Newsweek Interactive say it's the first full-fledged news magazine on CD-ROM. Managing editor Michael Rogers says multimedia is the best thing to happen to the printed word since television.
I think that there is a tendency of big media always to simplify a story, and that when we see public reaction against media, the mistrust of media, some of it is this sense that they're only being told part of the story. In the magazine world or in the television world, when there are facts that perhaps don't support the writer or producer's point of view, the writer or producer simply says, well, we're out of time. But in interactive multimedia, you're not out of time. You're not out of space. If it's relevant, you put it in.
Pushing the Tell Me More button may indeed give you more information, but is it more of the same? Skip Peasy, technical editor of Broadcast Engineering Magazine.
There's a danger to controlling your own input of news. If you do shut down some doors, let's say, put up some limits to what you hear, one of the darker predictions that you could spin off from this concept is that somebody who only wants to hear a particular political angle will filter themselves in their interactive menu so that that's all that they hear.
Already designers are talking about a filter box that will allow users to get just the news and information they want to hear. However, Michael Rogers thinks that we may already be getting too much information without enough knowledge or understanding.
That's when it gets down to a question of who is designing the way information is transmitted on the information superhighway. Is it technologists or is it people from traditional media? Because what technologists want to do with the information superhighway is not necessarily what the audience really wants. For example, technologists in general really embrace the idea of using the power of computers to personalize information. And a technologist, I think, tends to be swayed by the power of the tool. That's where we need the traditional media person to come in and say, wait a minute, we've been doing this for hundreds of years, and here's what the real needs are.
But already the fundamentals of journalism may not apply in these new media. It's getting harder to tell where journalism leaves off and opinion, entertainment, and even advertising begins. Rogers thinks separating ads and infomercials is as important as a separation between church and state.
I think we're going to see a lot of people launch multimedia magazines that turn into catalogs before they know it. And there's nothing wrong with a catalog. That's a good thing. But it's not a good thing if you think you're selling a magazine.
The final question is, who will ultimately control our choices in interactive media? Designers, journalists, the public, or the dollar? According to Bell Atlantic's chief executive, Ray Smith, the superhighway's killer applications for interactivity will be video games, shopping channels, pay-per-view videos, gambling, and advertising. If interactive journalism is to succeed financially, it may have to be as sexy a product as any of the other interactive choices. I'm Dee Roberts for the Communications Revolution.
So let us entertain you. A real info-active good time.
Who controls your media content choices in this new interactive age, and what real choices will you be offered? We have with us from the MIT Media Lab, John Orwant, interactive media analyst Janice Maloney, and the publisher of Wired magazine, Louis Rossetto. Louis, first off, let's acknowledge there's a growing trend towards commercializing all news and information content. We're calling it the infotainment trend. Do you see this as a threat to the quality of new media? For instance, do you worry about it at Wired magazine? Do you have to pack so much lifestyle advertising into the magazine that you can't offer as much substantive content as you might otherwise like to?
Well, at Wired, we present about 100 pages of very hard content on the people, companies, and ideas that are making the digital revolution every issue, regardless of how much advertising we have in the magazine. So that, I think, is not a serious concern of ours. I think there are a lot of different issues that are being confused here. And a lot of the fears that are being expressed about new media are actually phobias we're starting to develop about old media. Infotainment and the commercial pollution of the news is a phenomenon that's happening with television, newspapers, magazines, media that are out there currently. We're not talking about the new media that are coming, the online media, CD-ROM-based media, that are going to be revolutionizing how we consume the news and have a community in the 21st century.
Janice Maloney, do you agree there's nothing new about the new technologies that that should add to our fears in this regard?
Well, I think that, again, Louis is right in that the area is getting confused, but we are becoming a button-pushing group of people. I mean, the way that we consume, we have shorter attention spans. I think interactive media encourages short attention spans, and so we may just kind of, or we have the remote, the whole concept of channel surfing becomes all the more easy, I think, with a digital environment.
Mm-hmm. The short attention span is particularly a factor when we're talking about passive consumer entertainment media. Now, these killer apps we've been talking about, John Orwant, pay-per-view, video on demand, gambling, these sorts of things. A National Cable TV Association executive said that the mass of people really just want entertainment. Do you see a danger?
John? A danger in the sense that, you know, if people are only getting the entertainment, then they're not getting the information. But luckily, the same mechanisms that need to be put into place to give people the entertainment can also be used to ferry people information as well. So kind of when you're in for a dime, you're in for a dollar. And you'll have all of these services available to you. And when people get the ability to, you know, play their video games online and do their home shopping, they'll also be gaining the ability to read their newspaper.
But will they be offered that service? I mean, we're really seeing what's going to be coming down the pipe, a lot more entertainment, not information services. Isn't that true?
Well, I think, Louis?
Go ahead.
I think we're talking about a vision that's being forwarded by big media and big communications companies. And I think at heart, it's a really arrogant view of what's going to be coming or what they want to deliver. And point of fact, at the moment, there's a lot of interactivity going on out there. It's going on the Internet. It's going on bulletin boards. There's a real interactive community developing today that is pointing the way to how people will really be interacting online.
But how large is that community relative to the vast majority of people in this country?
Well, we're talking on the Internet of 15 to 20 million people. We're talking on bulletin boards of up to 5 million people. So that's not
inconsequential. It's growing by 30% a year.
And that's not an inconsequential number compared to any of the consumers of, it's certainly bigger than any newspaper in America or probably the viewership of a lot of television shows.
Mm-hmm. So this vision that the entertainment industry executives are offering us, you're saying that that may be what they're hyping up, but actually we're going to see much more useful, valuable, you know, name your value judgment here, educational purpose type media, right, Janice Moon?
Well, I actually don't think that. I think it's a combination. Again, I think we're really, there's a lot of mythology around new media and interactive media, and one of them is it's either all good or all bad. I think, you know, a good analogy is to think of this as if we're sitting down in front of this very rich meal and, you know, the entree has been designated new forms of communication and new forms of entertainment. It's very appetizing. But on the other side of that, there are the wheel issues, actually, I think in many ways we're throwing up false problems to not deal with the real problems. And what has been designated kind of the vegetables, which are over in the corner, are issues of security, isolation, issues of information for the privileged only. And I think we're talking about, we should be focusing on those, especially as journalists or as people who are voyeurs in this particular new media market. I feel my responsibility is to raise the real issues. And I think those are the ones that actually don't get discussed.
Okay, well, in terms of those real issues and stepping off the avenue of discussion around entertainment and advertising and mass media consumption, something that really would be new is suggested this intelligent agent, which is a piece of software that some companies are introducing to help you interact better with the new media, interact better with the information that's going to be presented to you. At the MIT Media Lab, John Orwant, your personalized electronic newspaper has within it a software component like this, an intelligent agent. It's something that's going to learn about me, it's going to learn about my interests, my likes and dislikes, and it's going to screen my information. Now, isn't this just another form of niche or micro-marketing, just like the guys with the pay-per-view and cable and all of that and the video games?
Well, in a sense, but you have to realize that when you're looking at your electronic newspaper, you're going to have a whole array of agents. And agents are good if they show you what they're doing. There are simple agents which might do something like just get you football stories, and it's very clear what that agent is doing for you. Or they might be complex, like some of the ones that you mentioned, where they're taking on a much more complicated task. They're trying to figure out all about you. And there, the critical thing to do is for the agent to be explaining itself, so that it's not a mystery to you.
Speaking of mysteries, if you have full internet access, you can join the discussion of this topic on our IRC channel. The channel name is TRP. To get there, type IRC and return. Then type /join %TRP. It's really no mystery. Be patient, and we'll see you there. John Orwant, intelligent agents to find information for us. Explain for us how that works.
Well, that's hard to do because there are really so many different sorts of agents. You know, when we're actually building these things, we just think of agents as being a computer program. But it's a computer program that takes some action, you know, the kind of acts by itself. It's a proactive computer program in the sense that it might go out onto the network and ferret out interesting news articles for you. It knows how to communicate with other agents that, you know, one might be at the New York Times, another might be at Blockbuster Video, and is able to talk to them and establish a means by which it could get a movie to show you or get some newspaper articles to show you.
Along the lines of anticipating what you might like. Janice Maloney?
Agents are viruses, and I think we need to say that. It is a virus on the network. Now, it's a good virus, and I think that but we don't really, we're creating, someone said the other day, a computer-based ecological system now. We are creating an ecology of computer living organisms on this network. We don't really understand what's going to happen.
Explain what a virus is in relation to computer networks.
Well, a virus, just as with human beings, a virus is not good. Oftentimes, they are perceived as something that can shut down the network, can destroy the integrity of a document, can harm data. And
it's a piece of programming that's wandering through the networks and doing its own thing.
Well, I think it depends on the system that you're talking about. I mean, all viruses aren't detrimental. And the ones that they're discussing now are actually, they're starting to call smart viruses. Mm-hmm. Some systems, Unix-based systems, have very few viruses, if any, and it's mostly the DOS-based world that has proliferation of viruses. I think the issue here is whether, and I think what you're driving at is whether this kind of a filter is better or worse than the kinds of filters we have today. And I think what the main benefit of newspaper of the future, the News of the Future project at MIT, is allowing the filters to go down to the level of the user rather than have them at the level of big media as it is today, that it's the editors at the New York Times or CBS Television who are deciding what you're going to see in the evening or read in the morning. This kind of technology allows you to decide the kinds of things that you're interested in and even the sources that you want to get them from.
Okay, that's fair enough. Fair enough. Change the editing location to the individual. But then the great fear is a scenario like this. I'm sitting over breakfast looking at my electronic newspaper that my intelligent agent virus has screened to suit my needs.
Viruses.
All right. Intelligent agent has screened for my needs or interests. And I'm just sick and tired of seeing things about Bosnia. Poof. Bosnia disappears. No more Bosnia in my consciousness or in my daily newspaper. This is a problem, isn't it? John Weiner? Orman?
Right. It is. There are kind of three different answers. The first is that if you indicate or if your agent infers that you don't want to see anything about Bosnia, then it should tell you what it's doing. And when people visualize the newspaper of the future, sure, they should see a newspaper on a computer screen, but they should also see, you know, perhaps a second screen that shows what your agents are doing for you. So the computer shouldn't force breath on you if that's not what you want, but it should show you how narrow you're being.
I also think there's this sort of myth that somehow we have perfect media today and that what we're getting in the future is somehow degraded. I think that what's happening now is that we're getting a dose of Bosnia without context, and we're not getting other news that we should be getting, or we're getting a drumbeat of news about some topics that are being forced upon us for some political reason that we don't even know about. And I only have to go back to the beginning of modern newspapers or modern media, modern mass media in general, which is yellow journalism and the Hearst papers of the turn of the century that brought America to the Spanish-American war. So, they were using a political topic for specific purpose to sell newspapers.
Sure, there's always been problems with traditional journalism as well. You're right. But the question here is, with the new technologies, is there something about the digital format that lends itself to very shallow surface coverage of issues? What happens when we see journalism changing into information services?
It's a commoditization.
Janice.
It's a commoditization of our information. And I think, you know, you have a very valid point, Jude, when you say that we can customize our information to our level of comfort zone. You know, we're all overworked. We don't necessarily want to see Bosnia in the papers. Maybe we don't want to know about the homeless situation. And I think, you know, again, I'm an advocate of the emerging technologies, but I do think that we choose not to talk about some of the downsides of it. And I have heard in conferences where people who are inventing this technology and working toward its end have said before, when issues of privacy come up for two-way communication on the television set so that you can order something, they have to have your, somebody gets your credit card and it's going number and it's going over a digital network. And someone raised the question of, why do you think Americans will willingly do this? And the speaker said, well, we'll give them a dollar to try it out. And by then it's too late. The information is already in the network. And, you know, I think we can't continue to treat U.S. citizens like lab rats.
John Orwent, with your intelligent agent operating your electronic newspaper, aren't you going to be doing just what Janice is talking about, creating a profile of the individual reader of your electronic newspaper that could potentially be sold to advertisers or marketers?
Yes, absolutely. But the big difference here is that the critical thing to remember is that there's not just one computer in the loop. There's the computer that you control, the one that's on your breakfast table or at your workplace or in your car. That's the one gathering information about you. And in the meantime, the New York Times or the Blockbuster company will have its computer that's trying to ferret out information about you. And is trying to build up entire demographic profiles so they can find out how many people rent a movie in a certain month. Mm-hmm. Now, what's important to do is to make sure that privacy is built into the system and that no information leaks out of the computer that knows everything about you. So it's important to have have user control over the flow of information.
User control, fine, but is there something that you're going to also put into the technology itself that protects privacy in some ways, encrypt the information that you gather or put together or assemble about the reader?
Right. We can expect a lot of encryption mechanisms. We can expect a kind of anonymous digital cache by which I can purchase information or I can purchase entertainment without revealing who I am, kind of like a virtual post office box.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to see with the new media more of these instant polls where on your television screen you have a question asking you, should we enter the Gulf War, yes or no, and you press a button to vote? Are we going to see more of that sort of thing?
I think we will, and that's only a few bits going back up the pipeline. You know, right now we have the traditional mass medium where there has to be a lot of bits, you know, a lot of video, a lot of audio coming down, and you know, you would have a problem if you tried to invert that, if every home wanted to start broadcasting its home movies to the entire network. But in the example of a poll that you give, that's just a few bits of information, and I think we will see a lot more of those.
Louis Rossetto, you've been arguing that the fears connected with new media, new technology, interactivity are really just old fears that apply to the current media. What about, though, this blurring of the line between fact and fiction, something that Hollywood's always done? We're seeing now in our news and information presentation a shift to opinions and information versus the ideals of objectivity and reliability. Don't you think that the digital format, the electronic computer format on your TV screen or on your computer screen is really conducive to a continuation of that trend?
I think that generals are always fighting the last war, and I think new media and new technologies offer people the opportunity to get to raw data and to unfiltered opinions, or rather information without opinion attached to it, so that if you find a story that's interesting to you, you can probe more deeply into it by sending agents out and getting more information about it, and discovering actually the underlying causes for what's going on. I think this is much more possible with new media than it is with old media today. And I think that all of this discussion, again, posits the supposition that that old media today is somehow perfect and new media is a corruption of that. I think it's quite the contrary, that
right.
That new media offers a possibility of actually solving some of the problems that old media has, and that old media itself is very suspect at this point.
Right, and we're not discussing old media, but though I recognize and acknowledge those problems exist, the question is, will the new media help or hinder in the solution of those problems? With Wired, you have a particular problem in terms of, say, fact-checking or how do you fact-check something in your magazine when it's mostly speculation about the future?
It's not speculation about the future. It's talking about what's going on today. So we just call the company that's doing it and ask them. Where it's speculation, it's clearly labeled opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I have to
Janice.
Say, I think that, the companies have a vested interest in presenting this information in a very positive way right now. And I think, not questioning the fact-checking capabilities of Wired staff or anything like that, but I think there needs to be analysis attached to what we're writing about these industries and how much we're advocating or regurgitating back what they're saying.
Well, I think sitting right here, I've been critical of the vision of big media and the big communications companies and what they believe is going to be the interactive future. I think there's a whole other interactive future that's growing now from the bottom up rather than these top-down visions that we've been talking about.
You're hearing from the co-founder and publisher of Wired Magazine, Louis Rossetto, also John Orwant with MIT Media Lab. They're working on a new electronic newspaper, and Janice Maloney, the editor of the monthly newsletter Digital Media. I'm Jude Tillman, and this is the Communications Revolution.
The Communications Revolution is produced at KPFA, Pacifica Radio in Berkeley, with funds from the Telecommunications Education Trust, established by the California Public Utilities Commission. It's distributed by Pacifica National Programming. The producer and managing editor is Alan Smithow. The associate producer is Carol Klinger. The executive producer is Barry Scott. For a cassette tape or a written transcript of this program, call the Pacifica Radio Archive at 1-800-735-0230 and ask for the Communications Revolution, Program 294. This is the Communications Revolution. This edition of the Communications Revolution was originally broadcast at an earlier date. The phone calls and the discussion that follow are pre-recorded.
Are the new media designed to promote mental couch potatoism? Join our discussion of the news of the future by calling us with your questions and comments. You know, we've been distinguishing between the mass entertainment media that the big companies, telecom companies, want to give us, the pay-per-view, cable TV, all cable movies on demand, video games, gambling, home shopping, all of that sort of thing, distinguishing between that and what we see as probably the more, I don't know, useful or possibly... positive, interactive types of media. But really, if all of the hype and the advertising and what people hear about and know about are the movies on demand, isn't that right, Janice? I mean, how are we going to get this situation turned around?
Well, I mean, it's very, movies on demand are a really, I guess, a sexy topic, right? Everyone wants to come home and relax. And so it gets hyped a lot in the media, but I think there's a lot of other really good things going on that just aren't video telephony, for example, and things like that. But, I mean, as far as movies on demand are concerned, my fear would be that if you buy into that whole notion of I can download any movie I want and I don't have to go outside, you know, are you creating a sanctuary inside your house where you're not actually going out anymore and seeing what's really going on in the world?
You more isolation to, and
right,
less community.
As opposed to driving to the mall and seeing it at a Cineplex.
Hey, right? You're still going outside. You're with
Is
people.
That real? Is a mall real?
A mall has people in it, and I think that's really, we are social creatures, and we are creating an environment where we can be completely isolated.
Right. I would agree. I mean, I don't think theaters are going to disappear. I don't think home shopping is going to entirely replace the malls that we see, unless they can in some way duplicate that social aspect.
Online or on screen or in some
right,
interactive
which
way.
I think will be very difficult and something we're not going to see for decades.
All right, let's bring some of our listeners into the conversation. Roger from Los Angeles, welcome.
Yeah, I just want to make a statement. I completely agree with your the lady that is against technology. I don't have a TV myself, and I refuse to be manipulated by the TV. I think the TV is very it's like a form of the government, they want all the masses to watch TV just so they could destruct their point of views about the government, just so they don't create mass unrest or something. This whole thing is going to complicate people's lives. And, you know, if you compare people's life in the 30s and the 20s and even the 40s, their lifestyle is much, much more easier and less complex than the people that are heavy into this technology nowadays. What do you think of that?
Janice Maloney?
Well, I have to say, first off, I'm not against technology. I think it's really important to get that out. I am the editor of a newsletter that talks about the convergence and advocates it's coming, but I also think about, we always have to talk about the dark side, and I guess I've taken that role today. But we are working more than we ever have been before. I think in the last 20 years we're working 1 month more a year or something like that. We've built another month into the year. It is possible that we could get more thoughtful information more quickly with this technology. It's also possible that we can get a lot of garbage. And I think none of that has been defined yet. And so what we really have to do is just raise the issues and be thinking about them critically at this point.
All right, Jeff from Oakland. You're joining us today. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Janice, bravo. I really applaud what you're saying and the manner in which you're saying it seems to be very balanced and very sound. I take issue with the fact that the editor of Wired is, repeatedly throughout the discussion is having like an either-or thing. And I think it's quite the contrary. What you're saying about the media, I think most people who are involved in the... old-style or current-style media would agree with the fact that there's a lot wrong with it. And what Janice seems to be saying is, therefore, before we go on to this new technology, let's look at all sides so that we don't make the same mistakes, which will be added to with the added power of the, you know, similar, if you look at the progress in the century with each new technology, like electricity, then boom, the electric chair, nuclear power, then boom, you know, the bomb. So, I mean, because it's an energy is neither positive nor negative. It's just a source of power. It's what you do with it and how you use it.
Thank you for your call, Jeff. Lewis, in some ways, it's directed against the comments you've been making.
I think that I've been critical of what I think is the mythologizing about the benefits of current media and the demonizing of a new media that no one seems to understand because basically it's still evolving. And
John,
the
do
point,
you, yeah,
the point is not to be uncritical of new media. The point is to be accurate in your criticisms and to pick issues that are really going to be coming down the pike rather than ones that you're reacting to old media, basically.
John Arwant, do you have any comment on that?
I would agree 100% with what Lewis is saying. What we're going to see are browsing tools come about. I mean, basically, if these services come out and they're bad, then people aren't going to use them. They're going to go right back to the traditional media. And that'll put pressure on the industry to come up with things that people actually want to interact with. And, you know, we're going to have the, you know, flood of information coming into our homes and coming into our offices. What we're going to need are agents, if you will, that can help us sift through that information and think of that as just a lens that helps you navigate through lots of information.
Lewis?
Yeah, I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that it's not commercialization that we should be fearing. There are a lot of other issues that are more important and more realistic looking forward, and they include a lack of privacy, they include overwork, they include perhaps an overwhelming amount of over access to information.
Let's hear from San Mateo. Maxwell?
Hi. By the way, I want to say this is my favorite show on KPFA, and thank you for having it. I just wanted to counter some of the arguments you've been giving about that this new media access to an electronic newspaper might make people more passive. My own experience has been much the opposite, particularly with the Mercury News Center, which is available on America Online, which has a large part of that newspaper electronically available today. And one of the things that I find the most exciting is that I can cut and paste from those articles and immediately do a letter to the editor. It's possible to do postings. And my own personal experience has been that the more I've had access to news online in a form that I can use, the more of an activist I've become and the more I've interacted with it and the more I've done things with it. So I think that actually we'll find an electronic newspaper doing very much the opposite in that it will give people an opportunity to very quickly capture information and do something with it in a meaningful way. And I would like your responses on that. I can take my answer offline.
Thank you very much, Maxwell. Offline, off the air. This is the computer language generation. What do you think, Janice?
Well, I would say that, Maxwell, I bet that you probably have a lot of technology either in your professional environment and your home. I'm going to be presumptuous and maybe assume that you are someone who also reads maybe 2 to 3 newspapers a day. You're in what the industry has termed an early adopter, someone who's kind of watching technology and becoming an early participant in it. And you're probably already involved in other media. You're reading, so your critical thinking skills and your ability to navigate all this information is a little bit maybe more honed than when this becomes commoditized and comes down to more average, I will say, more common U.S. citizens.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts from the panelists?
Yeah. Well,
John Orwin.
I would say that often, I mean, sometimes when people go home, they just want to veg. They've had a hard day at work, and they just want to be totally bombarded by whatever the TV has to show them. So I'm playing devil's advocate for a second there. The critical thing to remember is that with these new information services that are coming down the pike, it's important to have flexibility to allow the user to choose the degree of interactivity that he wants. If he wants to just sit back and watch TV, he should be able to do that. If he wants to take an active role in selecting what information he wants to see, he should be able to do that too.
So mental couch potatoism is your choice.
Right.
We're sort of distinguishing in this discussion so between the regular rest of us who are not in the techno loop and don't have computers and modems and all of that stuff, and those people who are already the early adapters. Is that what you call
them?
Adopters, as you call them, Janice. You made reference earlier, Janice, to a problem you see in the future with the new media of elitism. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, a newspaper costs under 50 cents today. And while there are many problems with existing media, almost anyone can afford to pick one up. Or they can, it's recycled and they can pull it out of the dumpster. I mean, you know, people can get information today without investing too much money or energy, let's say. When we're talking about the future with handheld devices that feed us information and being online, our television turning into a computer, we're talking about very expensive items, and information could become a privilege that you need a certain income in order to afford to acquire some of this information.
Do you see the same problem, Louis Rossetto?
Well, I just did some simple arithmetic. 30 days in a month times 50 cents a day is $15. You can get on America Online for $10 a month.
Once you have the computer and modem.
Once you have the computer and modem, that's true. Yeah, but what you're not paying for with the newspaper, of course, is the multi-million dollar print plant that they have, and the newspaper is being delivered to you with heavy subsidy from advertising.
And we don't have advertising online or in the computer?
Haven't figured out how to do it yet.
Well,
Steve Chase has absolutely made a commitment to deliver interactive advertising.
If sponsorship is okay for old media, then it's certainly going to be okay for new media.
Oh, I'm
not. And there's going to be the delivery of sponsored publications online as well as already beginning now.
You refer to Steve Case, just by the way, as the head of America Online.
The head of America Online.
Go ahead, Louis.
I think that this is a false issue being brought up, the issue of whether people will be able to afford access to new media. I think that there are already 5 million people that are participating in America Online. They're hardly the rich. To be information rich today does not mean that you have to be rich. It means a choice. It means buying a television or indulging in something else or buying the next step up in a new car or buying a computer for your family and using that in your home. It's a question of choices again.
Right. There are going to be costs, but it'll be for things like how large do you want your monitor to be?
Hmm.
And, I mean, it's hard to avoid a certain amount of cost in a lot of the technology that we're talking about. But if you look at the information superhighway, for instance, one of the things that we might see are gateways to this information, to the information network in schools and in libraries.
From San Diego, let's hear from Tim. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question's concerning these online systems having the ability to read your hard drive. Is this possible now, or will this be possible in the future, and what can occur in that type of privacy situation? I can take my answer offline if you'd like.
Thank you for your call, Tim. John Orwund?
Well, there was a rumor that Prodigy was doing that, which turned out to be false. Basically, if you're a news system and you release your product and say, you know, install me on your hard drive so you can get your information this way, I mean, if it turned out to actually access the contents of your hard drive, you know, there would be such an outcry that, you know, they would be absolutely banned from the market. And I don't think any news industry would be silly enough to do something like that without explicitly telling you. And I doubt that, that's going to be construed as a privacy violation. The users aren't going to go for it.
You're listening to The Communications Revolution. You've been hearing from John Orwant with MIT Media Lab's Electronic Newspaper Project, Louis Rossetto, co-founder and publisher of Wired Magazine, and Janice Maloney, multimedia expert and editor of Digital Media Newsletter. Ray Smith, who's the CEO of Bell Atlantic, one of the big players in the creation, the building of the new information superhighway, he actually posits that that people are going to have more time on their hands, not working harder and longer hours, but more time on their hands because they won't have to make trips to the video store to pick up movies. They don't have to go shopping at the grocery store. They can do all that from home, so they're going to have extra time to take walks in the park with their family. What do you think of that opinion?
Sounds like propaganda to me.
It is. It's just hype. It's just more.
No one agrees with that. John, do you agree?
Well, to a certain extent. I mean, what we're doing is giving people tools, and what they choose to do with those tools is up to them. They will be able to use them to save time. And the time that they save, they might just put back into plugging into the network, or they might use it for walks in the park.
Or they might work more.
Right.
Or they might work more.
Just so they can afford the next generation of that tool.
From San Diego, let's hear from Bo. Welcome to the program, Bo.
Yes, welcome. Thank you for welcoming me. I was thinking about this technology that it's very broad and very international, and it's losing the communities themselves. It's not taking into consideration that there are people around the community themselves that aren't being part of this technology, that everybody's forgetting about them. We're getting into technology, we're getting into theories and looking away from our own communities that need to be taken care of. In one word, we're just forgetting about our own communities, the disintegration of our own communities.
Bo, thank you for your call. Bo is worried about loss of community with the internationalization of all of these new media. But in fact, you've argued, Lewis, that the new interactive media will help enhance community. Is that not true?
Well, I think that there are two aspects to any media, and that one of them is information, and the other one is community, and that's been completely ignored in this discussion so far. One of the strongest parts of America Online, or any of the information services, any of the online services out there, or the internet itself, is the community or multiple communities that are attracted to it or that utilize it. And I think that, on the contrary, instead of losing community, there are more communities being built as people find like-minded souls across continents and across the world, that new kinds of communities are developing. They're not the same kind of communities that we recognize today, but they're just as powerful and just as valid.
From Northridge, we'll hear from Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Oh, better, I think. Basically, I guess my question relates to the growing elitism in reference to these online services. There are signs of priority access, for example, on online, which has grown so tremendously in the last year. Access has become very, very difficult for the average user, and there is the development of priority access. In other words, if you pay more money, you can get access before those who are paying the basic rate. And I wanted to ask about that growing. And also the other issue is, what about access for things like public media? Certainly places like Pacifica are not as present in the electronic media as they should be, and they seem to be limitations in terms of what the public media is accessing in terms of these mediums.
Thank you very much for your call, Steve. Thoughts about priority access? I assume he means informal rules and informal system that doesn't allow people with low incomes to have access to some of the glitzier online services. Any thoughts?
It's not any different than any other aspect of our lives. I mean, money, right, money rations everything. So it'll ration everything online. Otherwise, people will consume to the maximum whatever resources are out there.
The only thing with that is, and it's absolutely true, Lewis is right, that is, you know, an existing situation today, is that I think some of the people who are, you know, hyping new media, hype it as the democratization of information, and they're creating, you know, again, throwing up smoke screens or throwing up, you know, tantalizing bits of information that the consumer may say, oh, I want this definitely. This will be the first time in my lifetime that I'll be able to access information and have that privilege at any time I want.
And
I
what just they're really going to get is 500 channels of movies.
No, I don't think they'll get 500 channels of movies, but they may not get or be able to afford what they want just mm-hmm. as they can't today.
Well, what about the second part of Steve's question? Should there be mandated access for more public media or public access in the interactive media?
Certainly Al Gore, when he spoke on January 11th, you know, the White House and the Clinton administration is paying homage to that idea, if not completely ready to solve those problems. I think they kind of handed everything off to the Federal Communications Commission.
And to big business. They said, let's leave it in the hands of competition in the private sector.
Right, but that may not necessarily be a bad thing, to have mm-hmm. a shootout among the telcos and the cable companies for the mm-hmm. pipeline.
Somehow I think the administration's posture is more posturing than real.
Lip service to public
yeah.
access.
Well, it's a cover to allow the center of the program to go forward, which is to open up the cables and the telephone system to a new generation of media products.
From San Diego, we have Carl on the line.
Hello, how are you?
Fine.
I'd just like to say that I think people are much more intelligent than we give them credit for, the masses of people. And when you talk about the new technology creating or taking advantage of passivity and people not realizing what information they're going to be fed, I just don't think that's true. In fact, I think that's a fatal mistake that television has made. And they feed us things that we don't want to see. And for as big as that media is, I think they've missed the whole yuppie generation and people that are more intelligent.
Well, Carl, the big companies are sinking billions of dollars into the assumption that people are going to just passively take all this stuff.
Yeah, I think, though, the point that was made about the number of people active on the Internet negates some of that. I mean, you've got a lot of people using technology right now that don't want to be insulted every day and want to have choices, and this technology enables that. It doesn't stunt it. It actually enables further and deeper investigation of issues.
Thank you, Carl.
Also, in our next issue, we have an argument that someone is putting forward that all the discussion of consumer services is actually a smokescreen to let the big communications companies get into services that they hadn't been able to provide before. Namely, the cable companies couldn't do telephones, mm-hmm. and telephone companies couldn't provide video conferencing and other or video services, and that the actual people who are going to be utilizing the Infobahn are going to be big companies. That's the meat of the market. It's still the meat of the market is the commercial sector.
Mm-hmm. From Glendale, let's hear from Leo. Welcome to the program, Leo.
Yes, question about the global transmission of information in other languages. Can any computer pick up Japanese or French if that was the choice, your choice in receiving this information? Thank you.
Good question, Leo. I hear that this is in the works, that computers will be able to understand each other across languages. John Orwant, do you know anything about this?
Right. It's something that is on the way but is not here yet. As far as the big problems in artificial intelligence goes, that along with speech recognition are on the, you know, perhaps 5, 10, 15-year line that are coming ahead of us. We do have systems that can do it with moderate accuracy now, but those have yet to be integrated into the online network services that we're seeing.
So the direction is toward developing systems that can understand each other rather than forcing the users of systems to all speak in English, for instance.
Right.
As is done with the air traffic control and pilots of airplanes over radio. The question of elitism keeps bothering me, and this notion that, yeah, we've got this growing pool of millions of Internet users, it's true, but for the rest of us, how do you even get into that loop? How, especially when you've got all these great magazines like Wired and all of this who are speaking to the people who are already online, already technologically literate, and then you've got, on the other hand, massive millions and billions of dollars in advertising to convince the rest of us that what we want is, you know, video on demand and video games and all of this sort of thing. How's that bridge going to be traversed? Any thoughts?
People are doing it. I mean,
how?
they're talking to their neighbors, their friends are telling them what's going on, they get interested in it. Interest in the internet is enormous. If you go to any bookstore now, you find that there are a whole pile of new titles about things that you can do on the internet, what the internet means.
Right.
And all the major bulletin board companies are attempting to add internet access to their services. Right now you can get on Delphi for $10 a month and have direct access to the internet.
America Online also, I think its circulation grew, or subscriber base grew 145% last year. So it is happening. I think absolutely people are coming online more and more, and the internet is becoming, people are very much involved with the idea of making an interface or a navigation system that makes it more palatable to go into the internet, and because right now it is kind of an art form to navigate it.
We have just a few minutes left. Let's try to get one more caller on, okay, John? Bob from San Diego, welcome.
Yeah, hello. I've, in the interest of self-disclosure, I should say I'm a newspaper man, and I'm calling from San Diego. And I just want to say that I think that a lot of what they're saying about the electronic newspaper is really trying to invent the wheel all over again, except what you're getting is a square wheel. I didn't hear them say anything that the electronic newspaper is going to do that the current newspaper doesn't do better. You can read it all, the whole thing at once. You can read only one section if you want to. If you only want sports, you can only read sports. If you only want Bosnia, you can only read Bosnia. You can
still
have
90% of the news is left on the newsroom floor.
Hold on,
John.
Let me finish, please.
Yeah.
If you want privacy, you just pay the paper boy for the paper, and nobody knows your credit card number or anything at all.
good thoughts. Thanks for your call, Bob. John, okay, we've only got a minute left. Let's let John respond to it. Go ahead,
right.
John.
Grr. First of all, 90% of the news is left on the newsroom floor. You're giving people the ability to get access to a lot more information. Second of all, When I have a paper newspaper in front of me, what I want to do is double-click on an article and find out more. I want to find out about the source. I want to find out if the pyramids were moved in the photograph. And also, we're talking about giving people more personalized news, news that has more direct relevance to them. And that ties into the communities that were talked about before. What we'll see is, in addition to the sections in your newspaper, you'll also see something like, if you have children in a public school, you'll see PTA announcements and comments from other people in your community about PTA issues.
So you don't agree at all with what Bob's saying?
Nope.
Fighting words, huh?
Yeah.
So what's one last shot at this topic before we have to wrap up? What do you think are the biggest challenges in terms of the new media? What do we have to accomplish?
I think we just have to keep a balance, and I mean that's certainly what I think. There's absolutely mind-boggling, wonderful things coming. I really believe that. I think we are talking about better access to information. We are also talking about some negative aspects of it that we have to be aware of and have to deal with the dark side of technology before it arrives, and it should be something that comes all the way down to the consumer level. This should not be a choice that's made in an ivory tower, that we're bringing this to the consumer, and aren't they going to be lucky and thank us for it?
And with that, I'm afraid we've come to the end of our hour. Just speaking was Janice Maloney. Also joining me today have been Louis Rossetto and John Orwant. We had engineering help from Monitor Radio in Boston. You can send us your comments via email at our internet address, kpfa@well.com. Be sure to mention the communications revolution in the subject field. I'm Jude Tillman. Thanks for listening.
The communications revolution is directed by John Rieger. The technical consultant is Tim Pozar. Our on-air engineer is Jim Bennett. Indigo Sum is the administrative assistant. Music created by Tony Kniff. You can receive a free resource list for today's program by sending a stamped self-addressed envelope to Pacifica Radio Archive, Post Office Box 8092, Universal City, California 91608. Ask for program 294. This is the Communications Revolution.
Next time on the Communications Revolution, who owns culture in the digital age? Will the growth of a few giant copyright holders mean no more free creativity? No more Michelangelo or underground rock? Is everything going to be just Mickey Mouse? That's next time on the Communications Revolution.